live on YouTube via the Legislative Coordinating Commission. And we are preparing to live stream the meeting. Just one second. Okay. We are good to go, Senator Kiffmeyer.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Ho, I appreciate that. I'll call the meeting to order. The Legislative Budget Office Oversight Commission, welcome to you everybody to another one of your Zoom meetings that we've all gotten used to a little bit more. And so the Legislative Budget Office has had a significant event happening. Our Executive Director, Michelle Weber, did apply, and is now the new Executive Director for the Legislative Coordinating Commission. So congratulations, Michelle. We're excited that you're going to be stepping up into that. So we won't be losing you, though. Looking very much forward to your still being connected with that. And so for members, for you to know, this will be Ms. Weber's last day with us officially as a Executive Director of the LBO. And then we're going to be transitioning to the new acting director, Christian Larson. Farther on in the agenda, Ms. Weber will go into that a little bit more, as you can see that on the agenda. But we appreciate all the work that you've done, Ms. Weber. You really served over probably one of the most difficult times getting started, getting things running and up. And but you showed your skills and your abilities and your kindness in doing your work, and we appreciate you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So with that, members, we'll go ahead and get started on our agenda. One of the first things to do is to approve the March 4th meeting minutes. I'm open for a motion. If you want to unmute yourself to make any motion.
Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes. Representative.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Minutes are moved. All those in favor, by the way, as far as our voting process here, for those of you, if you'd raise your hand and say aye, so we can see you visually and also hear you. If there is a division, then we'll go to a roll call, but otherwise we will stick with raising hands and a voice vote. So unmute yourself, Senator Wicklund, Representative Neuer, wonderful, all right. With that, the motion is to approve the March 4th meeting minutes. All those in favor say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails and is adopted. Thank you very much. So the number two item on the agenda is 2020 fiscal note statistics. And for this item, we're gonna have Mr. Carlson, Jim Carlson, make the presentation on the 2020 fiscal note statistics. Mr. Carlson, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen here. All right, do you see my screen?
Just to mention, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So good morning, everyone. Madam Chair, council members, for the record, my name is Jim Carlson. I'm an analyst with the LBO. And I'm going to be presenting some of the highlights from our 2020 fiscal notes metrics summary. The 2020 legislative session was the first session where the LBO had full oversight of the fiscal note process. And the LBO metrics summary, which will be available on our website, provides a look at the fiscal note activity for the last session. We'll start with the obvious mention of the disruption caused by the COVID pandemic. The pandemic caused a shift in priorities, which impacted the volume of fiscal notes as well as the due dates. We also had a number of special sessions, which resulted in fiscal note activity throughout the summer. The data presented in the summary was pulled from our fiscal note tracking system on September 1st, 2020, and it reflects fiscal notes requested during the regular session from February 11th through May 18th, 2020. We'll start by taking a look at the volume of requests. there were a total of 561 fiscal note requests, resulting in a total of 1,103 agency assignments. And a quick note on the fiscal note requests and agency assignments. When a fiscal note request is made, it can be assigned to a single agency or to multiple agencies, depending on the bill and which agencies are impacted, which is why there are more agency assignments than fiscal note requests. Of the fiscal note requests, 354 of the requests were completed, 7 were incomplete, and 200 were inactivated. Of the agency assignments, 659 were completed, 16 were incomplete, and 428 were inactivated. This session saw a higher number of fiscal notes get inactivated relative to other non-budget years, primarily due to changes in legislative priorities as a result of the COVID disruption. The chart on the right end of the screen shows the timing of the fiscal note requests and agency assignments made during the session. There's a noticeable drop in the volume of requests after the fifth week of session, which correlates with the first deadline as well as the start of the COVID disruption. Despite the decrease in requests later in session, the total fiscal note request volume was similar to the past two non-budget years. For example, in 2018, there were a total of 575 fiscal note requests, and in 2016, there were 570 requests. And interestingly, even though there were a fewer total number of requests this year, the total number of agency assignments was higher than in previous non-budget years. If you get a chance to take a look at the report, you'll see we also provide a comparison between the non-budget years and the budget years, as the budget years experienced significant higher volumes of fiscal note requests. This slide highlights the differences in volumes based on policy area as identified by the LBO. The chart shows that the Health and Human Services area received the highest volume of fiscal note requests with a total of 145. The next closest area, Economic Development, received a total of 70. The fiscal note requests were categorized to each policy area based on the lead agency for that fiscal note. Oftentimes, an agency may contribute to fiscal notes outside of their policy area when they're assigned to a fiscal note where the lead agency is in a different policy area. The LBO can use this type of information to evaluate policy area assignments of its analysts. Next, we'll talk about the timeliness of fiscal notes completed during session. Of the completed fiscal notes, 59% were completed, meaning that they received final LBO sign-off by the due date set in the fiscal note tracking system. An additional 19% were completed within 3 days of the due date. Of the individual agency assignments, 71 were completed by the due date, with an additional 13% completed within 3 days of the due date. The reason more agency assignments are completed on time than fiscal note requests is because most fiscal notes are assigned to multiple agencies, and it requires more review time to complete the larger consolidated fiscal note review. On this slide, we can see that the average number of days from the request date to the due date was 14 calendar days. The average number of calendar days from the request date to final LBO sign-off was 15 days. The measures of timeliness are reported in calendar days to account for activity that often occurs outside of the normal business days. The fiscal note tracking system sets a default due date of 8 business days, which typically means a total of 10 to 12 calendar days, depending on when the request was made. A fiscal note requester also has the option of setting a different due date when making the original request, and the requester can also change the due date once the request has been made. Due dates on many fiscal notes were changed during the 2020 session as a result of the COVID disruption. And finally, this slide provides a look at the volume of fiscal notes made during the multiple special sessions that took place this summer. There were a total of 30 requests, resulting in a total of 55 agency assignments during the first 4 special sessions. We have continued to receive fiscal note requests after this data was pulled to account for the last special session. As with the regular session, the Economic Development and Health and Human Services policy areas received the most requests. That concludes my presentation, and I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
I have one. This is Lynn Carlson. I'm not sure if we're supposed to do the hand raising thing or not, but I think I'm lost. Madam Chair, I'm interested in this question I've raised before, but when you get to near the end of session in a very busy time, how do you prioritize the fiscal note requests? And when I look at health and human services on your chart, just the sheer volume there, followed by economic development. You know, when you get to the point where the fiscal committees are allocating their resources and so on, and there are sometimes amendments and changes in the bills, I'm just wondering how you prioritize the requests so that things are done in a timely manner near the end of session.
Mr. Carlson?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Carlson. That would depend on the policy area, obviously, and we would prioritize based on the need. We would work with the fiscal analysts in that area to identify which notes are going to be the most important. And work with the authors if necessary to identify, you know, which is the priority. I don't know if Ms. Weber has anything to add to that.
Right. Yeah, well, let's go to Ms. Weber for a part of that answer as well. Ms. Weber?
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, a longstanding practice has been to work closely with the fiscal analysts for the committees to understand what the priorities are for the chair. And then oftentimes there are communication and conversations that happen among fiscal analysts, LBO analysts, and agencies to determine which fiscal notes may be needed more urgently. And that's how the process, it's not a formal process that is identified within the system in terms of identifying differing levels of priorities, but it's more of a communication method that we employ in working closely with fiscal analysts who are working very closely with committee administrators and the chairs of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Representative Carlson?
No, I say thank you.
Oh, okay. All right, good. All right, any other questions for in regards to the fiscal note statistics? Okay, I don't see. Representative Neuer, I see your hand up. Want to go off screen if you can?
Nope, thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, is there any way to differentiate the regular session from the special session? I know I've been trying to gather some of the data from the online process of trying to see the physical notes that have been requested during the special session compared to the regular session so that we can quickly access the difference of the bills that are coming through.
Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair and Representative Neuer, yes. The PowerPoint presentation that Mr. Carlson just walked through, the last slide of that did identify from a data perspective the fiscal notes. Catherine Ho did develop a special site on the LBO website that we can send around to all of you where all of the completed notes are posted so that can be separated from the regular session fiscal notes search engine. And we can provide that to all of you so that you know exactly where that is.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Representative Neuer, does that answer your question?
It kind of answers the question that I have, but when you go through the normal process, when people are used to, I think we should also have an option that someone can request. They can do a quick search on special session or whichever session may be. It may be the first special session. We're now going to the sixth special session, so at least we can track based on which session we are in. Because there are fiscal notes which may be transferred from one session to the other, and we can track the changes between the sessions.
Ms. Weber, that's just input, I think, for an improvement to a future search function. Ms. Weber?
Madam Chair and Representative Neuer, yes, it was when the the activity associated with fiscal notes started to occur with the special sessions. That was another unique factor in the past, as you all are familiar with. There are not the number of special sessions that we've seen during this current interim. And traditionally, fiscal notes have not been part of that overall process as they were during these special sessions. So we had to adapt quickly, but we had some limitations in terms of what we can do, and we can definitely work to improve that going forward.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Thank you, Representative Neuer. That was a good question. Anybody else for Mr. Carlson on fiscal note statistics? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead to the third item on the agenda. That's the overview of stakeholder surveys. Maren Bartle is going to give us that agenda item. So, Ms. Bartle, if you want to go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will just share my screen one moment. All right, I hope everyone can see the presentation.
Ms. Bartle, could you lean into your microphone a little more? You're just a little certainly. Soft.
For the record, my name is Maren Bartle. I'm an analyst with the Legislative Budget Office. Today, I will be presenting on the LBO 2020 evaluation survey results. The survey was sent in August to members, committee administrators, legislative assistants, House and Senate fiscal analysts, agency fiscal note coordinators, agency fiscal staff, and MMB budget division. In total, we received 73 responses, with the majority of those respondents being members and a close second being agency fiscal note coordinators and agency fiscal staff. In general, the survey responses indicated that the LBO is meeting expectations. The LBO asked respondents to indicate whether we've met, exceeded, or did not meet expectations in six categories. Those six categories include communication and collaboration, content and quality of fiscal notes, timeliness, accuracy of fiscal notes, objectivity of fiscal notes, and transparency. Some significant feedback was that the majority of respondents indicated that the LBO either met or exceeded expectations. On average, 87% of respondents indicated that the LBO met or exceeded expectations, with just 8% of responses indicating the LBO did not meet expectations. In all six of the categories, the most selected option was always meets expectations. In the first category of communication and collaboration, the LBO ranked the best in this category, with 42% indicating the LBO exceeded expectations, 51% indicating the LBO met expectations, 6% indicating the LBO did not meet expectations, and 1% selecting not applicable. Next, in the category of content and quality of fiscal notes, the LBO was found to mostly meet or exceed expectations, with 29% indicating the LBO exceeded expectations, 58% indicating the LBO met expectations, 8% indicating the LBO did not meet expectations, and 5% selecting not applicable. Next, in the category of timeliness, this category was the category in which the LBO received the most negative feedback, with 11% indicating the LBO did not meet expectations. This is just a slight increase from the average 8%. But overall, this category was still mostly positive feedback, with 25% indicating the LBO exceeded expectations, 60% indicating the LBO met expectations, and 4% selecting not applicable. In the next category, accuracy of fiscal notes, the LBO was again found to mostly meet or exceed expectations, with 22% indicating the LBO exceeding expectations, 66% indicating the LBO met expectations, 5% indicating the LBO did not meet expectations, and 7% selecting not applicable. In the category of objectivity of fiscal notes, again, the LBO was found to mostly meet or exceed expectations, with 25% indicating that the LBO exceeded expectations, 59% indicating the LBO met expectations, 9% indicating the LBO did not meet expectations, and 7% selecting not applicable. In the last category of transparency, again, the LBO was found to mostly meet or exceed expectations, with 29% indicating the LBO exceeded expectations, 56% indicating the LBO met expectations, 7% indicating the LBO did not meet expectations, and 8% selecting not applicable. Lastly, the LBO asked survey respondents to indicate whether the LBO has built trust with stakeholders. Again, overall, this was mostly positive feedback, with 72% indicating that the LBO has built trust with them or their agency or office. 25% indicated the LBO has somewhat built trust, and 8% indicated the LBO has not built trust. It's important to note that this data would indicate a response rate of over 100% at about 105%. For this question, we provided users the option of selecting multiple items, whether we built trust, somewhat built trust, or not built trust. So this did slightly skew the results, indicating a response rate of 105%. With that, that concludes my presentation, and I would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Fargle. One of my questions was, for those who said did not meet expectation, was there a follow-up question in regards to why that was said so that we could help define, or Ms. Weber, would you like to take that?
Madam Chair, we did provide an option for respondents to provide written feedback. Most did not provide written feedback, but in each category, we have taken the written feedback for the does not meet expectations and made notes of those things where we could improve on those items. So I could go through each category's comments if you would like, but right now I have it categorized just under significant feedback, the items that we saw appearing more than once in the comments.
Thank you, Ms. Bartle. I think, you know, I appreciate the fact that there is a very, very strong meet or exceeded expectations. I think that's really good, but the LBO is a new office. So you've got to go and do the best you can and do all that which you did. And I think that's shown by the survey. But I think in addition, always striving for continuous improvement. Could you maybe just generally categorize what the comments were when they wanted some improvements?
Certainly, most of the comments around improvement were simply based on timeliness and then also communication and collaboration among stakeholders were some of our most common feedback. And there wasn't necessarily feedback that suggested how we could work to improve those items. But they are definitely, timeliness was definitely a concern for us, being that we received the most negative feedback on that. Some of the comments on that were, however, somewhat contradictory to the data, in that the comments indicated for that category that nothing has changed in regard to timeliness, or that the LBO has increased the turnaround of fiscal notes. So unfortunately, we in that category, we just weren't given comments that spoke to why we did not meet expectations.
Okay. Always good to have the data, though, measured in those days according to our standards. Ms. Weber, do you want to add anything in regards to that?
Madam Chair, I would just add that the LBO is incredibly committed to continuing to improve, and that's part of our investment in doing the stakeholder survey on an annual basis to get input from the individuals we're working with. And I want to also just acknowledge the work of the agencies, the work of fiscal analysts. As you know, the LBO has a limited role with respect to reviewing and analyzing the information, but a lot of the positive feedback speaks to that strong partnership that exists among the information that the agencies are providing to us, as well as fiscal analysts working collaboratively with us on the fiscal note process.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Anybody else? Questions or comments?
Madam Chair, there, Lynn Carlson, there's a couple of us.
Representative Carlson.
If you want to look at the list there. At any rate, I'm one of them with my hand up.
I'm sorry. I forgot to look. Thank you.
Yeah. And then I think there's at least one other individual that has.
Mr. Hallstrom will be next. Yes, I see that now.
So at any rate, kind of a follow-up to my earlier question about timeliness. I was wondering if you could tell from the comments if the concern about timeliness came from fiscal chairs, and if they commented about whether that was a need that was maybe not being met when they were in the process of putting the bills together in the final days. And also related to that, what impact on timeliness if a fiscal note comes in and you've reviewed it and you view it as not being adequate and you've returned it to the state agency for further review. How is that impacting on your data in terms of timeliness? Because I'm picking up on that 11%, you know, it kind of depends on who's or where that 11% comes from in terms of the role that they perhaps play in putting the budget together. Whoever take that, either the presenter or Ms. Weber.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, the data did not indicate, the comments, I should say, didn't indicate where the timeliness error problems were occurring. And so from the comment perspective, I can't answer your question. I could put together the data on who those the respondents were. I mean, not identifying the respondents, but whether they were members or agency fiscal staff, for example. I could put that together for you if you would like that, but I don't have it offhand right now.
Thank you, Ms. Bartle. Ms. Weber, do you want to comment?
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, I know your follow-up, your second question related to the impact that if the LBO reviews a fiscal note and has additional questions or asks the agency to provide additional information or make modifications to the fiscal note. That's reflected in some of the data that Mr. Carlson shared earlier about the average number of days. So what sometimes what that will result in is a fiscal note not being completed on time because it requires additional work for the agency for them to resubmit the fiscal note to us and for us to review it.
Thank you, Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair, I might just
go ahead, Representative Carlson.
She volunteered that she could get the information. I don't think I need it now, but perhaps when they do another survey in future sessions. And I won't be here then, but maybe you could explore that a little bit the next time you do an evaluation as to what the source of any dissatisfaction would be, and especially on the timeliness, because that's been sometimes problematic when we're trying to, the time we're getting the bills out of committee and up onto the House floor, in our case, near the end of the session, and sometimes having to wait for a fiscal note. I've historically had to adjust as chair of Ways and Means or Finance, as we called it before that, had to adjust my schedule because we weren't able to get a fiscal note in a timely manner to move the bill out of committee. So that's why I perk up on the timeliness and just was interested in what the source of the comments happened to be. So maybe that's something for a future evaluation.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. I'll go next to Mr. Hallstrom and then Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just wanted to start by saying, a word of congratulations to Ms. Weber on her new role and also to just commend the group for doing the examination and the evaluation of the work here. So I just think it's it is beneficial. I was curious if you I think this is for Ms. Bartle, what your percentage of response is. I know you got about 73 back. I'm curious. This is one of our survey, Achilles' heels sometimes at the executive branch as well. It's sometimes hard to gin up the right amount of responses. I'm just curious if you felt like you got a good representative sample. And then I do have one more, but I'll pause for a moment.
I'll call on you again then. Ms. Bartle, to that question, total number of requests and then the percent of reply.
Madam Chair, Mr. Hallstrom, it was about a 13% response. I believe Ms. Weber might have the exact number, but it was, I believe, approximately 550 people received the survey and we had 73 responses.
Okay, Mr. Hallstrom, you wanna continue?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think this probably dovetails with what your comments earlier, but I'm curious from either Ms. Bartle or Ms. Weber's perspective, you know, kind of taking your, the feedback collectively together, what you take away as your, you know, what's the direction you're getting from the respondents that you, you know, to improve.
Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair and Mr. Hallstrom, I think collectively it's things that we knew in advance of the LBO taking responsibility for fiscal notes, that the balance between quantity and timeliness and quality of information is a really difficult thing to achieve. We don't know with the active work that took as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, and the work that we did collaboratively with fiscal analysts to extend due dates, for example, on fiscal notes, it'll be really important for us to look at both this most recent year's data and next year's data and on an annual basis, as I said before, to see what we can do collectively with the Oversight Commission to improve the timeliness of fiscal notes. Timeliness is something that seems to be consistent in what people would like to see improved. And it's a really difficult thing to achieve, particularly with complex new initiatives and then the overall volume of fiscal note requests.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Not only that, I think for all of these, but especially this, the COVID situation, we'll probably look at those graphs and those charts and see that steep fall off coinciding with that. Mr. Hallstrom, do you have some comment or a follow-up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, I think the only thing I would add to that, and I agree wholeheartedly with what Ms. Weber is saying about sort of the challenges and the competing interests around timeliness and accuracy, just to continue to find ways to tease out that balance in the survey, because, you know, the accuracy from time to time can be, you know, as significant or more significant than the timeliness of any particular note. So, overall, I'm thankful to and appreciate hearing the feedback here.
Thank you, Mr. Hallstrom. No doubt about it. It is important to have that. And I think the look forward to maybe a little bit higher return on the surveys. Think about some ways that we can increase that, reminders, a variety of other things, whatever it is. But I think even the respondents were to do that. Okay, we've completed that. Thank you, Ms. Bardal. Appreciate your work. With that, is there any other comments? Representative Vogel, good thing I stopped a moment. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. just a little follow-up on Representative Carlson's questions on maybe getting a little more granular. I wouldn't want to see a lot of time spent on a 13% response, but I do think that if it's easy, maybe looking at where the there seems to be pretty much consistent responses with either doing really good or not doing good at all, where those might have come from. And if they tend to be one group or another, might help as far as, first of all, determining what exactly was not satisfying. And then also, secondly, how to communicate better so that we're not communicating with the entire group if there tended to be a concentration there with one of these majority respondent groups. So just from a statistics type perspective, looking at how do you get to the information you need, and that might be worth considering if indeed it isn't gonna be too time consuming. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. And I would concur with your comments as well. And I think that Representative Carlson and Mr. Hallstrom, I think kind of along the line, it really matters, the group of respondents. Although one thing I found is that if you're not unhappy, you tend to not respond as much as if you are very unhappy, you will tend to want to jump in and comment. But for that right now, I think we will leave that agenda item. I think those were excellent comments, and thank you to everybody. And I would actually encourage Ms. Weber, you know, in the future, like maybe having, like you've done before, some sit downs with committee chairs or committee administrators or something like that in the House and the Senate, and dig a little bit deeper in regards to some of those timeliness questions. Also towards the aim of, again, what can we all do to help to make that more likely? We all have a job in this. So the next item on our agenda is a voting one. This is going to be presented by Carlos. I don't want to mispronounce your name. So I will have you introduce yourself, and we're going to have updates to the uniform standards and procedures.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Carlos Wedeka, analyst with the LBO. It's a tough
welcome, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Wedeka. My apologies. I should have thought of that ahead of time.
Not necessary, Madam Chair. I'll go ahead and share my screen with everyone. Okay. I hope you can all see the slide that reads proposed changes. Okay, perfect. Okay, I'll go ahead and start then. Madam Chair and Commission members, today I'll be reviewing some of the proposed changes to the LBO uniform standards and procedures. And two documents have been made available for individuals to review and follow along with. The changes proposed before the Commission today are found in the document titled Updates to the Uniform Standards and Procedures. But for the purposes of my presentation, I'll be using the PowerPoint presentation titled LBOOC USB Changes 2020. So the changes to the Uniform Standards and Procedures are a result of an internal review and from feedback solicited from external stakeholders. The majority of the proposed changes are technical in nature, and some of the changes are proposed to provide more plain language and clarity. And so to be clear, I will just highlight some of the changes that we believe are the most substantive. So I won't review all of them, but if I can, I'd like to start on page 5 of the document. So Madam Chair and members, on page 5, we're looking at the description of different types of fiscal notes. And I want to start with the proposed change to the description for classified unofficial notes. The change seen in the first line is more of a technical change made to avoid using the phrase fiscal note within its own definition. The more substantive change is seen in the lines that follow that. The proposed language that you see at the end of the paragraph is the result of conversations with nonpartisan staff in the legislature, where it was decided to try to best match this language to that of chapter 13.64 with regards to classified unofficial fiscal notes. So this proposed change does not have an impact in how the office approaches its duties, but rather it's an attempt to match the language to that of statute. And Madam Chair members, if there are no questions on this change, I can move ahead to the next one.
Hey, members, are there any questions on this page 5 as on the screen? Okay, go ahead. Please okay. Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm on page 9 now. So looking on page 9 at the second paragraph in the section, many of the edits here are for clarity and for plain language. I want to highlight that we begin to reference private data on individuals and non-public data as separate terms. Edits just like this one are consistently made throughout the document. And additionally, two entries are made in the glossary to define the two terms in reference to their definitions as stated in chapter 13.02 are made in the glossary. So again, this does not change how we treat classified unofficial fiscal notes, but rather it just acknowledges the distinction between the two terms. Madam Chair members, if there are no questions on this change, the next item I'd like to highlight is on
page. Let me just quick ask, members, are there any questions on page 9 on your screen?
This is Eric Hallstrom. I did have a question.
Mr. Hallstrom.
I just was wondering if you could walk me through the approach to essentially choosing the classification level of the data. And I'm thinking through sort of the process under the Minnesota Data Practices Act and whether an individual can make a choice about classification that is different from how a interpreter might have to interpret it under the law. So if somebody says, this is private data on me, that there has to be something more than just that underneath the interpretation. I'm sure I'm missing something here, and I just want to make sure I understand how this process works.
Ms. Weber, do you want to take that?
Madam Chair and Mr. Hallstrom, what we did is held a series of meetings with counsel in the Senate and the House to make sure that the language that we were using in the Uniform Standards and Procedures was consistent with the language that is in Chapter 13.64, I believe it's Subdivision 4, that allows a member, so here where it says data on the individual would be the member of the legislature that makes the request. And systematically, the LBO does not even know who that member is because requests are made by fiscal analysts on behalf of members. But that's what this is intended to do.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Anybody else with a question? Okay, Mr. Whitaker, you can proceed then.
So Madam Chair, members, the next change I'd like to highlight is on page 18. So this is a technical change to the document. Our current document, which is available on our website now, which was approved last year. On page 18, there's an image of a fiscal note worksheet, which is actually a tool used by agencies to complete a fiscal note. That image does not reflect the actual presentation of a completed fiscal note as an end product. And so this may be misleading to the agencies that use the USPs or to a general consumer of the Uniform Standards and Procedures. So for those reasons, we recommend removing the image of a fiscal note worksheet from the USPs. Additionally, a completed fiscal note example is provided in the LBO's user guide, which may be a more ideal presentation of a fiscal note and its end product and its end stage. So this is more of a technical proposed change to just remove that image from the fiscal note or from the USPs.
Thank you, Mr. Whitaker. And members, any questions on page 18? Okay, seeing none, Mr. Whitaker, you can go ahead, proceed.
Okay. Mr. Madam Chair, members, I'd like to proceed to page 20. So on page 20, the edits in the first sentence are made to provide transparency as to who has access to preliminary notes. So these are technical corrections. We want to be clear that folks know that all LBO analysts have access to preliminary notes. There was a redundancy listing out Senate Finance Committee Administrator twice. Redundancy. And as is always the case, agency FNTS users also have access to preliminary notes. So that's just a technical correction. The edit to the second sentence is to avoid singling out fiscal analysts and agencies apart from other users of the fiscal tracking system. So this guidance applies to all users and it provides the LBO with an opportunity to share any concerns that may exist regarding the reasonableness or accuracy of the information provided on the preliminary note. So we just want to acknowledge that there may be situations where communications are occurring between the agency and the LBO. In which the LBO analyst may be aware of upcoming edits to a fiscal note, to a preliminary note. So we just value the opportunity to communicate those situations to a user that would like to use a preliminary note.
Members.
And Madam Chair, this change is also consistently made in its corresponding sections for consolidated notes, unofficial notes, and classified unofficial notes. So you'll see that in the document. In those areas as well.
Thank you, Mr. Whitaker. Members, any questions? Okay, I'm seeing no hands or questions, and Mr. Whitaker, you can proceed.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move ahead to page 25. So, Madam Chair, members, the edits to the first paragraph of the standards here on page 25 are made to be consistent with the use of the phrase private data on individuals and on public data, as I mentioned earlier. Additional changes made to this paragraph are for plain language and clarity. And because of the sensitive nature of classifying unofficial fiscal notes, I've changed.
Okay, members, thank you, Mr. Whitaker. Members, any questions? Okay, I don't see any or hear any. Thank you, Mr. Whitaker, you can proceed.
Okay, so the next change I'd like to highlight is actually on the same page under procedure one. So members, mentor members, the changes to procedure one are meant to provide clarity on the conditions under which a request for a classified fiscal note can be made. So we tried to apply more plain language and we modified the sentence structure a little bit. This aligns with the LBO's current practice. We do not believe there's any substantive change made here, but again, for the sensitive nature of classified unofficial notes, that it was prudent to mention it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Whitaker. Any questions, members? Okay, I don't see any. You, Mr. Whitaker, you can proceed.
Sure, Madam Chair, if we can look at procedure 12, so just on the next page, on page 26. Under procedure 12, we also changed the sentence structure and made some technical changes. We added some language to provide clarity on the conditions that must be met for a classified unofficial fiscal note to become publicly available and no longer considered non-public data. This guidance does align with our current practices. This decision to include this change was made after discussions on the topic with staff and members. So to be clear, we want the language that was used for a request should be the exact same language that has been made publicly available, which would then trigger a classified unofficial fiscal note to become publicly available.
Okay, I have a question for you, Mr. Whitaker. Does this require that the original classified unofficial fiscal note be made public? It doesn't require it. It just means that it's available upon request. Am I understanding that correctly, Mr. Whitaker?
That's correct, Madam Chair. It just becomes available upon request.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, members? Okay, you can proceed, Mr. Whitaker.
Okay. Madam Chair, members, if we can go to page 32. So on page 32, the first paragraph here, we added a statement to note that a fiscal note request can be made on a portion of proposed legislation. We wanted to provide clarity and some formal guidance on what is already current practice. So a fiscal note may be requested on a portion of bill language. It's an article section or something.
Thank you, Mr. Whitaker. Any questions or from members? I'm seeing none. You can proceed, Mr. Whitaker.
Sure. Madam Chair, the next item I'd like to highlight is on page 37. So under, we added procedure 9 to the assumptions and estimates here. We added guidance on how agencies should acknowledge impacts to non-state funds as a result of bill language that originates at the state legislature. This is consistent with language in our user guide and past precedents. And we want agencies to identify those impacts in the narrative to better inform the fiscal note in general.
And Mr. Whitaker, my question for you is, this is, again, I'm just gonna restate what is already in there. This is in cost and savings, not just cost. Okay, I see that. Okay. All right, members, anybody else, any questions? Okay, you can proceed, Mr. Whitaker.
Okay. So Madam Chair, members, next I'd like to go to page 46. And here the standard is edited to clarify that a fiscal note may not need to be revised every time new information is made available. So depending on individual circumstances, if the LBO believes that new information would not necessarily result in a more accurate estimate, it may be determined that a revised fiscal note is unnecessary. And as the standard states, this is in communication with agencies. And this change provides the LBO with flexibility and discretion to determine whether a fiscal note should be revised based on new information becoming available.
Okay, any questions, members? Seeing none, you can proceed, Mr. Whittaker.
Madam Chair and members, the last item that I'd like to point out is on page 49. So here we're looking at the appendix, and the references to statutes that are applicable to the LBO are retained, and links to the reviser site are maintained active. However, a suggestion we're making is to have the language pertaining to each statute separated from the document itself for the sake of brevity and maintaining a more concise document. Additionally, this change was made acknowledging that if there were to be a change in any of the statutes, the LBO Oversight Commission would have to reconvene to procedurally adopt those changes to the Uniform Standards and Procedures. So for the sake of simplifying our document, we thought it might be best to maintain the references but separate the language itself from the document.
Thank you, Mr. Whittaker. Members, any questions? I see one from Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Mr. Whittaker, one of the House fiscal staff just contacted me to point out on page 20, there's the last sentence should have a B in it. It says should not distributed, that sentence should say should not be distributed.
Madam Chair and Mr. Marks, thank you for pointing that out. Madam Chair, and there may be small items that may have been overlooked through the process, such as a miscapitalization, a missed word like that. We may need to just be able to make those small minor corrections.
Mr. Whittaker, can you go back to that slide that is being referenced by Mr. Marks on our screen? It's page 20, I believe, Mr. Marks.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, let's go back and see what you're referring to. It makes it a little bit easier.
Absolutely, yep.
There we are.
Right, so on the last line there, should not be distributed without.
Okay. Oh, a typo, need to add, insert a B. Thank you, good catch there.
And Madam Chair?
Yes.
The error is in the slide, not in the actual standards documents. Look at the standards, the language is included in there. However, the draft motion that's been provided to you for consideration would, if you utilize that motion for the purpose of today's meeting, it would allow for us to make minor edits or technical corrections that may have been overlooked.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Weber. Thank you, Mr. Marks, Mr. Whittaker. Okay, for the document.
I'm done, so I'll go ahead and stop sharing my screen, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Whittaker. All right, members, we went through them slide by slide. I see Senator Wicklund has her hand up. Senator Wicklund, go ahead.
Yeah, I just had a question. I printed the document that was sent out about proposed changes, and did I miss one change, that page 31 timeliness? Did you go over that one as well when you were presenting?
Mr. Whittaker, can you put that up on our split screen again? Page 31, right, Senator Wicklund?
Yes, the slide, I don't have the page numbers on my printout, but I think it was page 9 on the slides, and I just missed, I don't know if you went over it and I missed it. That's fine. I just wanted to make sure.
On timeliness, Madam Chair and Senator Wicklund, I don't believe I covered timeliness on any of my slides, but
it's just in the handout that was emailed to us. So that's why I just wondered if it is something that we should be aware of, you know, when we're voting on these, or if it's
Madam Chair.
Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair and Senator Wicklund, I believe you're referring to procedure number 11 on page. And what we did there, that was just more of a plain language change to the previous sentence. So if you look at the sentence just ahead of that, that's proposing reflected in strike through. We are just we're trying to restate the same principle here with it, just in a more straightforward approach. And the one piece that we did add is that we would also consult with other stakeholders that might be beyond agencies or the fiscal analysts if there's some need to do so.
Senator Wicklund, would you like that slide to be put up so we can all see it? Would you feel more comfortable if that were the case?
I have it in front of me. I'm looking at it, but if anybody else, you know, wants to see it as it was reviewed.
Okay. Anybody else? Or are we all okay? Senator Wicklund, it looks like we're okay. All right. Okay. Now, I believe on this one, we need to take a vote on them. And members, I just want to be sure, questions, are there any concerns or questions at all on the changes as proposed, either in the written document or in the presentation today? Okay, I'm seeing none at this time. So in regards to that, again, we have a vote, updates to the uniform standards and procedures. I would accept a motion to approve. Mr. Nauman has.
I so move, Madam Chair.
Chair, thinking if there, with your permission, maybe you want to incorporate in the motion to give the LBO permission to make technical corrections, just in case they find a missing B. I'm not saying that happened here, but it might make things easier if you give them editorial content correction.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman. Representative Carlson, I believe you are going to make a motion, and I think that motion does include that. If you want to read it, you have to unmute, sorry. It was an excellent speech, though. Still muted, Representative Carlson.
There we go.
There you go.
I've got to hold it down, apparently, than just have it. I was going to make the motion that we approve the changes, and then I think the language that Mr. Nauman suggested, which is fairly common when we're passing bills out of committee with the omnibus bills, that we allocate that authority to staff to make minor technical changes. So let's incorporate that in the motion as well.
All right. So moved by Representative Carlson. Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion for the vote, if everybody, voting members, would please unmute and also put yourself on screen. Okay, all those in favor say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, opposed. Motion prevails and is adopted. The updates to the uniform standards and procedures I have passed. Thank you very much, Mr. Whitaker, for your presentation. The next item on our agenda is the operating budget for fiscal year 21, which meaning the final year of the two-year one, then also for fiscal year 22-23. And for that, we will go to Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair and members, are you seeing a document titled LBO Operating Budget Planning?
Yes, I can see it.
Okay, great. So I've been asked to, I was asked to look at a operating budget reduction, both for current year, fiscal year 21, as well as the upcoming biennial budget of 5 or 10% to the operating budget. The table that you see before you shows three different scenarios. The first two rows are current law funding and the staffing level supported under current law. The middle two rows show the impact of a 5% budget reduction on the overall operating budget for the LBO, as well as then the bottom two rows show the impact of a 10% reduction to the LBO operating budget. I'll first review the column that is titled fiscal year 21 and the impact that a 5 or 10% reduction would have on the operating budget for the LBO in this current fiscal year. For fiscal year 21, the current operating budget is $1,483,000, and that supports 12 staff. It also provided resources to the LBO in the event we were to lease office space at the 525 Park Building. If we were to receive a 5 or 10% operating budget within fiscal year 21, that reduction would be absorbed within the operating budget through salary savings. We had a deputy director position that we never filled. And then also we've been able to temporarily locate the office in the basement of the state office building, which allowed us to save resources on leased costs. For fiscal year 22 and 23, things change a bit. Under current law, the LBO is anticipated to receive a reduction in the fiscal year 22 operating budget beyond the current budget that we have in fiscal year 21. So our fiscal year 22 budget would be reduced by approximately $290,000. Under current law, so before any additional reductions were provided. And so you'll see that we go from a $1,483,000 operating budget in fiscal year 21 to a $1,193,000 operating budget in 22, and then a $1,194,000 operating budget in 23. Under current law, this represents a 20% reduction to the LBO operating budget from fiscal year 21 to 22 and 23. So an additional reduction to the fiscal year 20, the way that the current law reduction is being managed is by not filling that deputy director position, anticipating that we would not be able to afford leased space. And then we are also eliminating any enhancements to the fiscal note tracking system that we would otherwise typically do. We contract with MMB for the maintenance and support of that system, as well as any changes that we might need to like to see made. We would also be potentially having to eliminate all other costs beyond just salary and compensation costs. So equipment costs, supplies, any professional development for the staff would be eliminated. And it's likely too that under the current law budget, to maintain the current level of staffing, we would potentially have to leverage some carry forward resources to support the operation of the office. So a 5% reduction in fiscal year 2022 would result in an additional reduction of staffing to the office of 3 staff, because, and that is based on all other cost saving measures have been fully leveraged to manage the current law funding reduction. If we were to receive a 10% reduction, it would mean that we would have 4 fewer staff in the LBO than currently planned for, which is a total of 11 staff.
Thank you, Ms. Weber.
Yes.
Go ahead. Do you have more?
I do not, Madam Chair. That concludes my overview of the impact of a operating budget reduction to the LBO.
Okay. So the question I have for you, Ms. Weber, at this time is, you're mentioning that there's a 20% reduction from fiscal year 21 to 22-23. Could you explain why there is a 20% reduction already?
Yes, during the 2019 session, the legislature received a funding request from me as the director of the LBO. The office was originally funded for a total of 5.5 staff. And one of the first items that I identified as a challenge for the LBO was the limited number of staff that would that could be supported. In the final agreement, there was a biennial total that was agreed to for the LBO rather than taking the second year of the biennium, which would have been fiscal year 21, and applying that as a resource in 22 and 23. In fiscal year 20, fewer resources were necessary for the office than once we fully staffed up in fiscal year 21.
So because of the, Ms. Weber, so because of the averaging of 20 and 21, is that where the reduction came from?
Correct. It's because of looking at the fiscal year 2021 total. That total was then applied to the biennial budget for the LBO in 22 and 23.
Mm-hmm. So already the LBO has a 20% reduction, even without the 5% as well. It's already, so it actually amount to a 25% reduction.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Members, any other questions? Comments? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Ms. Weber, and congratulations on your new position. This is very exciting for you. My question is on the, oh, they took down the shared screen. Oh,
I can. I'll put it back up, Senator Rosen.
Is the deputy director that position remaining vacant? Is can you tell me the reason why it's vacant? Is it was just hard to find somebody to fill that spot, or you did you find out that you that wasn't necessary? And then the second question is the under 2021 you have the 5% reduction is for the deputy. Does that is that included in your three FTEs in 22, 23?
Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, thank you, first of all, for the congratulations. The deputy director position, we posted for it late last summer and into the fall. We did not have a successful candidate. And as it got close to the legislative session, we made a decision to not fill the position, in particular, if it was someone who wasn't familiar with the Minnesota legislature and the fiscal note process, that it could have been disruptive in our first year of operation. And because we were anticipating a smaller volume of fiscal notes, we thought we could manage it within our with our existing resources. When the budget outlook changed, we strategically made a decision to leave the position vacant, understanding what our current law funding was and that we didn't have the resources to support that ongoing. Your second question about whether or not that position is included in the reductions in 22 and 23, it is not. If you look at the second row that's titled current law FTE, you'll see under fiscal year 21, there's 12. And then the new starting point under current law for fiscal year 22 and 23 is 11. Overtly making the decision to not fill that position on an ongoing basis.
So Ms. Weber, that drop from 12 to 11 is based on the decision to not fill the deputy director?
And because under current law, we have a reduction in operating funding from 21 to 22.
Mm-hmm. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, that answered my question.
Okay. All right. Well, it's particularly difficult, Ms. Weber, because of the 20% reduction already to start with. So to deal with a situation like that, I think we need to take a look and maybe talk with offline with Senator Rosen and Representative Carlson and staff, Mr. Marks and Mr. Nauman, and take a look at that to see what's going to happen here in the future. All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Weber. Are there any other questions? Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Your hand is up. Go ahead.
Yeah, my hand is up. I would like to have Ms. Weber comment a bit about what the responsibilities are for the deputy director. And it looks like if we don't fill that position, following up on Senator Rosen's question, it looks like then that position would be permanently eliminated as we would move into the next biennium. So just so we understand what the role of the deputy director would be as we make that decision, and you indicated we would be delaying the decision and have further discussion, but maybe for the benefit of the group, it would be interesting to know what the responsibilities are.
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, the deputy director we had anticipated would have a small portfolio of agencies that it would also review and provide oversight for fiscal notes. I assumed that responsibility during the 2020 legislative session, so I had a portfolio of agencies that I worked with. As we moved into the next legislative session, we recognized that as the director needs to be available to work with all analysts and step in when either volume or complexity of fiscal notes has overshadowed their capacity or ability to manage the work. Also from a redundancy standpoint, if we were to have a staff vacancy or someone were to need to be out for a period of time, we did feel like we would approach this next legislative session trying to manage the work within the office with the one fewer position being available to see how we could handle that. But that was the intention, was that the deputy would have a portfolio of agencies as well as serve in a lead capacity. One of the organizational changes that we did make is we have identified two individuals within the office to serve as lead analysts as a resource to other analysts who might be dealing with complex issues.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, we'll have further discussion about that, but that's helpful. It just wasn't clear to me what, at this point in time, the role of the deputy director would be. So that was helpful, and we'll have to discuss the budget issues later. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Like Representative Carlson, I will not be around when the budget is determined for 22-23, but would like to speak to the need to make sure that we're properly staffing. This is, you know, one of the things as we just went through was the revision to the procedures document. And I think sometimes we fail to realize how much time and effort and input we've had now as legislators relative to creating fiscal notes, which really are the way we're going to spend our money. And you know, being in business and knowing how important it is to make sure that you're getting your financial projections right is so important. I remember when I got to Scott County, it was in 2003, right in the height of a budget crisis. And the county administrator talked to me about not filling the CFO position because it was a way to save some money. And I'm generally fairly fiscally conservative, but I remember telling him, if we hire somebody as a CFO and they can't save us more than we spent on that person, it's not their fault, it's our fault for making a bad hiring decision. So yeah, I look at the LBO as somewhat like that, because as these bills come forward, to have our staff that we control questioning what's going into a bill and making sure that the analysis is accurate, but also reflects what we need from a separation of powers standpoint, the legislature's needs, is just so utterly important. So as you go forward on this, sometimes we can be, you know, I think the old saying is penny wise and pound foolish. Let's make sure that as that budget is put together next year, especially relative to the amounts that we're talking here and the amounts that are spent in government, that we don't pass up the opportunity to make sure that as fiscal estimates are done, that we have the staffing available to make sure that we're getting the maximum efficiency out of the taxpayer dollars when it comes to bills. So I recognize this in an editorial on something that's going to be a difficult task next year. I would just caution people with cutting where we can save money rather than spend money. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. And I think your point is well made. It's the revisor's office, legislative budget office, those things that serve us and make it possible to do our work are really critical functions. But I always felt, though, that in fairness to every agency, that we should take a look of what does that mean? How do you do that? And in time so that we can actually make some decisions about that. Ultimately, it's us, the legislature, that will make final decisions, but I appreciate Ms. Weber laying things out so we have a knowledgeable understanding of what those decisions mean. I think it's made more difficult by the fact that just by current state law, there's already a reduction of 20% that I find very, very important for us to keep in mind in making these decisions. Thank you, Representative Vogel. Members, anybody else? I don't see any other hands. You can just go like that in case it's easier than finding the button. All right. Seeing nobody at this time, we'll go ahead. That was a presentation for information. Doesn't require a vote. The next item on our agenda, number 6, is the LBO Director Transition Plan. And again, Ms. Weber, just to let you know, members, that Representative Carlson and I had several meetings individually together, went over what does it mean to have this transition timeline, and I appreciate her doing that and going over that. So I thought it was important for the rest of the commission members to know that that was the process. So with that, Ms. Weber, if you'd go ahead and present at this time.
Madam Chair and members, are you able to see the timeline on your
screen? Yes, I can.
Okay, great. So on October 15th, last Thursday, I officially became the executive director of the Legislative Coordinating Commission. And this transition timeline outlines for you the various steps and milestones that we'll be working to achieve. As the LCC director, one of my first responsibilities is to do the posting and recruitment process for a new LBO director for consideration of appointment by the commission. This outlines several steps that we're taking, but I'll highlight a couple of them for you. Item 3 on the timeline refers to the appointment of an interim director, and I'm pleased to share with you that Christian Larson within the LBO, who serves as a lead analyst with the economic development area, has agreed to serve as the executive director or as the interim director for the LBO. Madam Chair, if it's okay with you, I'd like to invite Christian to introduce himself to the commission, and I will stop sharing for a moment.
Okay, thank you very much. And Mr. Larson, I appreciate you being with us today, and you can give us your background and anything else you'd like to share, and welcome to your new position as interim director. Go ahead, thank you. Mr. Larson.
For the record, my name is Christian Larson, interim director of the Legislative Budget Office. Madam Chair and members, As Ms. Weber said, currently I serve as the economic development policy analyst for the LBO, and also serve as a lead analyst within the LBO. Before that, I spent 3 years with the Missouri Department of Economic Development. There I performed economic and fiscal impact analysis for the state, along with doing labor market information and industry level research. Before that, I spent 5 years between the University of Oregon and South Dakota State University in a budget analyst capacity. I have a master's degree from the University of Minnesota in public policy and an undergraduate in economics. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer any of those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Anybody at all? All right, thank you, Mr. Larson. We look forward to getting to know you better. You have big shoes to fill to follow during this time, and a critical time for us too, going into the next legislative session. But it's good to know that Ms. Weber is fairly close by to be helpful with that. And we appreciate your stepping up into this role at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Weber, you wanna go on?
Madam Chair and members. I'd also just like to highlight Maren Bartel, who you heard from earlier. She is stepping into an interim lead analyst role along with Joe Harney, who's our other lead analyst. So Christian, Maren, and Joe will work together to make sure that the office is prepared for the responsibilities associated with the 2021 legislative session. Another item that I'd like to highlight for you on the timeline is the process that will be—
Could you share your screen again?
Sure. Okay. The process for hiring a new director. So the position is currently posted. It will close this Friday. There will be the first round interviews and the resume review will be conducted by nonpartisan staff in the House, Senate, myself as the LCC director, and then Judy Randall from the OLA will serve on the interview panel as well. And we will invite candidates in. This is item 9 on the timeline. We will invite candidates in for a first round interview, and then we will make recommendations for candidates to advance to a second round interview process that will be inclusive of members of the Oversight Commission. It will include Senator Kiffmeyer and Representative Carlson, and then two additional members from the Senate and the House. And then a final recommendation will be presented to the full commission for consideration of appointment. And that could be one candidate, it could be a couple candidates that are brought forward to the full commission. Our goal would be to conduct that final commission meeting sometime prior to November 20th. So we're working really hard, recognizing that this is a difficult time, but to try and give a new director as much time in advance of the 2021 session starting. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions that members may have, but I also do just want to share how honored I've been to serve as the director of the LBO and how appreciative I've been of the opportunity to work with all of you. The LBO team is really a phenomenal group of individuals. They're incredibly committed to working collaboratively with agencies and fiscal analysts to provide high quality fiscal information to the legislature. And I'm very proud to have been part of that office and team. So thank you all.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. I appreciate the fact that you've placed us on a course with this transition timeline at a critical time for us going into our major legislative session and other things going on ahead of us. So I appreciate, and it's there for all of you members to see what the process is and what it will involve. And so I'm very grateful for that and want to thank you for your work in regards to that. I see Representative Carlson, you have your hand up.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Well, first of all, I do want to congratulate again. I have earlier Ms. Weber on a new appointment, but being that this is her last meeting in an official capacity, I think it's important to again congratulate her. Many of you will be working closely with her in her new role as well. But I do have a question. When the names come forward to you and I and the additional House and Senate member staff, Ms. Weber referenced that there could be one or possibly two or more names that would come forward. Would there be a ranking then for our information, if, you know, who your first recommendation would be versus your second? Or would they be just all moved forward, whatever that number happened to be, with equal footing before us? Curious. We've done that. I've been involved with personnel issues for the House going back 30 years. And sometimes we have ranked the people to some degree, or we've ranked them simply because sometimes you make an offer and you are turned down. You know, they decide that maybe the salary or they've had other offers that have in the meantime come into play. So that's why I ask about the ranking and what your intent is. I'm not going to make a recommendation other than to just see what your thoughts are.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Ms. Weber?
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, right now between the first round interview and the second round interviews, the first round interview panel that includes the nonpartisan staff, we would be forwarding candidates to a group of the commission members for consideration without any sort of ranking. We will be available as those interviews take place if you have questions for us about any of the candidates that you're considering or would like to discuss them further with us. And then as a group of commission members, you would be making a determination about how many of those candidates to advance forward to the full commission. And at that point in time, I think you could make the decision about whether or not, if you have more than one candidate that you're advancing, we could talk about what would be appropriate in terms of the overall recommendation to the full commission.
Okay, thank you. I think that's something that's important to at least give some thought to how we move forward at that point in time. I think I shared with you earlier when we were talking about this, I was involved with the University of Minnesota in a search committee for the Center for Transportation Studies. And we had one name that came forward, made the offer, and the person for personal reasons ended up declining. He chose to remain at the University of Iowa. And we had to go back to square one as a result of that and start all over again. We've had other situations when I've been involved with personnel issues for the House where our first choice for one reason or another has declined. So just something to think about as we go through the process. If we end up with just one and that person declines, then if we go back to square one, that delays the decision is the main concern. But I'll drop it at this point other than to say that's something to think about at a future meeting.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Good point. Good points being made, especially at a critical time. We want to be sure we're able to continue to move forward, and I'm sure that Ms. Weber will help us to accomplish that. Okay, the next item on our agenda is the potential future meeting dates and topics. Again, Ms. Weber, did you want to discuss that for us?
Yes, Madam Chair and members, as I mentioned, the next actionable item by the commission will be consideration of the new LBO director. So we will keep you apprised as we work through the process, the first and second interview process, but we were hopeful that we'd be able to conduct a final meeting of the commission prior to November 20th to allow that candidate to provide any notification to a current employer and get started in December prior to the session starting.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. We'll certainly stay tuned for that, members, mainly for you in that November timeframe. With that, we're on other items. I don't have anything else for this commission. So if we've completed our agenda, is there any other comments or any other questions? Feel free to bring them up right now. Otherwise, we will have concluded our business. I don't see anything. Okay, good. Wonderful. Well, having completed our business, thank you, everybody, for taking time out of your busy schedules to join with the commission, enable us to have that quorum so we're able to conduct our business. That's really important. I think you'll also realize that a lot of good information comes through our commission meetings and is very helpful to all to be able to have that information. But with that, our business being concluded, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Bye, Representative Carlson.